So, we are coming down to the final couple of nights of our marriage series. We talked about, over the past couple of Thursday nights, we talked about the role of a godly man. What is his role in the marriage? What is the role of a godly wife? We talked about your role in the marriage. And so, men, you know, you are whenever God gives us a direct order, a command, that means it doesn't come natural to us, whether men or women. So wives, he gave you two simple ones. Wives, submit to your husband and respect your husband. So we learned, what does that mean? We learned that for us as men, God had to command us to love our wives, but hopefully you discerned or you learned that it's not just providing a roof over her head and food in the fridge. So if you missed either one of those, they're up on the interweb, so you can listen to us at our website. You can go check it out. So that brings us down to the final couple of Thursdays when we're going to wrap the marriage series up and get back into the book of Isaiah. So let me ask you guys a question. Let's see how good you guys are. If we were to ask, what would you say are the two biggest problems in marriage? What would you say they are? What is it? Money? Communication. I noticed the girls said communication. Men, what do you say it is? Well, I'll tell you what it is. Money is right. Sex is the other. Sex and money, and they oftentimes are interrupted by our communication. And believe it or not, sex and money can affect each other, right? When there's not enough money, you get into arguments, and that affects your intimacy. So what we are going to do over the next tonight and next Thursday is tonight we'll talk about the godly couple and their money, because believe it or not, by the time they end up in my office, it usually ends up being one of those. But also, I agree, communication is a big deal, and I gave you plenty of tools on how to communicate with each other earlier on when we talked about the difference between men and women. And but oftentimes, it will usually come down to, as I just listen for a while, it deals with money and intimacy. And like I said, those two are some oftentimes connected, because when there's not enough money, you get into arguments, and don't you touch me happens, right? And so what I want to do is kind of help you guys to understand a few things, even though I wouldn't say these are going to be biblical principles, they are connected to it. So it's a little bit unlike where we've been studying right out of the book of Genesis, right out of the book of Ephesians. This is going to be a little bit different. And so I think that, you guys know, okay, although I did hit you up for money a couple weeks ago when we sent almost $11,000 down to Calvary Chapel, Houston. But normally, I'm not the guy that talks about money unless we get to it in the Bible. And usually, new people or visitors are just waiting to see, if he talks about money, I'm out of here. And, if he starts going there, that's it for me. And so you guys know that's not one of the subjects that I really cover unless we're getting to it as we study it book by book, chapter by chapter, verse by verse. And so I do believe that, for those of you that have been with us for any length of time, that's not a subject that I hit on all the time. And so, even though Joel, who is one of our guys that leads Crown class, he's always banging on me, Rob, you need to talk about it. I said, I will when we get to it. I will when we get to it. So I'm not making a plea for money. So just let's put that up front tonight, okay? You guys are amazing givers, as we just found out on Sunday when you bunch of stinkers got one over on Mari and I, which, by the way, thank you very much. And, normally, okay, so many of you thought, because I teased about it, right? When was it, on a Thursday night or was it a Sunday morning? Was it a Thursday night? Both? And I said that I'll either give you, I'll buy lunch for everybody or you can send me to Maui. And I said, we're going to have lunch together. I did not know what you guys were up to. I swear to you, I didn't know. You got me. You guys got us this time. Normally, somebody always messes up. You know, somebody hands us the wrong bulletin with a little note inside, or we find one laying around, but we had no clue. So you guys did good deceiving someone, okay, just so you know that, all right? So it was fun. So and we are excited. Yeah. That's what I heard. This all took place while we were in Oregon. Yeah, that's what I heard, so... So let's do something. Turn with me to the book of Romans, and I'll show you something. And chapter 12, Romans 12. Now, we're going to, I just want to maybe help you guys. Some of it you would think, well, Rob, that is about as practical as you can get. I mean, everybody should know that. Really? Come and sit in my office for, you know, a couple of Mondays, and you'll discover that not always do, you know, are things that are easy looked upon. So Romans chapter 12. So look at this. Here we see, and I'm going to start this kind of in a strange place because I want to make sure that we don't take this in a wrong way. So look what he says in chapter 12. We'll pick it up at verse 3. For I say, through the grace given to me, to everyone who is among you, not to think of himself more highly than he ought to think, but to think soberly, as God has dealt to each one a measure of faith. For as we have many members in one body, but all the members do not have the same function, so we, being many, are one body in Christ, and individually members of one another. Having then gifts differing according to the grace that is given to us, let us use them. Now then he goes on to list the gifts, which that's not what our study is about tonight. And by the way, I believe in every single one of them, they're all for today, just for to put it on record. So let me start off by saying this to you. If you're married, you've probably already discovered that opposites attract. This is one of the difficulties I have with the online dating world, because most people go to the online dating world and they put in all of their kind of characteristics and their character traits, and they look for somebody who matches all of them. You know, match.com. But if you think about it, for those of you that did it the old-fashioned way, like my wife and I, with letters through snail mail, before even email, before even phone recorders, when I had to talk to her mom and say, is Mari there, right? Remember those days? Okay. So, but Mari and I quickly discovered that in areas where I'm weak, she's strong. In areas where she's weak, I'm strong. And so I believe that God intended for us to have these opposites. Now, of course, there are certain things that we do have in common. We both love the beach. We both love riding a motorcycle. We love, you know, certain aspects. We love, you know, sushi and you name it, right? So we do have a lot of things that are in common, but there are many things that we are totally an opposite. But yet, that's what marriage is supposed to be all about, right? So in the area of finances, it's much the same thing. Some of us are better at handling household books than others. Some of us, I have found, you know, to be true in marriages, period. I mean, that's what, you know, why Richard and I talked about that on Sunday. He loves that aspect. He loves sitting behind a desk and crunching numbers. I hate that. You know, and so for some of you that are sitting here, I keep failing to mention that. Some of you singles that are still sitting here or that are sitting with us through this, you know, I want you to, you know, talk about this up front rather than waiting. And this is always a subject that I talk about in pre-marriage. Instead of waiting, you know, the sooner you talk about it, the better you will be. So let me ask you a question you don't have to answer. In your marriage, who's better at handling the finances? Who's better at keeping track? Okay? Who's better at being careful? Who's better with the math and the numbers? Who's more disciplined with saving and sticking to a budget? So these are just things you need to think about. You got to talk about this. Now, men, listen. Remember, we talked about this. This is leadership. So, men, you need to initiate that conversation if you haven't already. I'm going to assume many of you have, but for you single men, this would be something you should initiate just to talk about the area of finance. And so I want you to understand, here's the deal. Whoever's best at it should be doing it. All right? Does that make sense? Whoever's better at keeping financial records, whoever's better at keeping a budget, whoever's better with the math and all that, should be the one to handle that, should be the one doing that. Now, I've had men tell me, but wait a minute, Rob, I'm the leader, so I'm supposed to do it. I said, but dude, you can't even add 2 + 2. You know, I have literally, you know, I mean, and I ask people, who told you that? Who told you that just because the man is the leader of the house, he's supposed to be the one to carry the finances, he's supposed to be the one to do all of that stuff? I have discovered that a leader is also big enough to recognize his area of weakness, right? If you talk to people out in the corporate America, when CEO, they have a term called staffing to their weakness. So what does that mean? They know what their strengths are, just like Richard and I talked about on Sunday. He knows what his strengths are and what his weaknesses are. I know what my strengths and weaknesses. And so Richard says, hey, I'm now back here at Calvary Ramona doing something for Rob so he can go do what he is good at. And it's the same thing in a marriage. It should be the same thing. Men, you should be humble enough to recognize if you're not better at it. And by the way, in most cases, women are better. I hate to tell you that. Not all, but in many. I'd say probably 80% of the households, women do a better job at it. So, men, you be a good leader. Delegate your weakness. Hand it off to your bride if she's better at it. So, if the wife is better at it, she should handle it, period. That's not saying you're weak. It's saying you have an area of weakness that you're admitting. I want to give that to you because you're stronger at it. So as a leader, I am recognizing I have a weakness, but you have a strength that puts the two of you together. You see? So that brings us kind of to a couple of areas that create conflict. And so hopefully, just make sure, because sometimes by the time they get into my office, I find out. Hopefully, you have joined your finances together. So you singles, make sure that that is something that you look at and you discuss that that's something you're going to do when you start moving towards your marriage day. Because remember what we read in Genesis. Therefore, a man shall leave his father and his mother, be joined to his wife, and the two shall become one flesh. You're going to become together. Now, I will give you a couple of, hopefully a little bit of outs on this for some of you that are freaking out right now on me, okay? So you become as one person. Now, that's not just talking about sexually. That's talking about you're going to meld two light. How many, just out of curiosity, how many of you did a unity candle in your wedding service? Let me see, okay? How many of you did something other than that? Like with some of the new stuff now, you had Unity Sand and all of that. How many of you didn't have candles when you got married? They didn't invent them yet. So if you've ever seen Unity candles, what is the symbolism of it is beautiful. You have two individual candles burning for uniquely themselves. And yes, their relationship with the Lord is burning. They take those two candles, unite them together to light a center one, to where they're now saying, we're becoming one. Then they extinguish their own, right? Saying, yes, we're going to remain unique individuals, but we're going to unite together to be one, to serve the Lord together as one. And so it needs to be that way even in the area of your finances, okay? Now, I'll give you a few exceptions here in just a minute, okay? So uniting two people together is, you know, you're no longer one. So you know, I've had people say to me, but wait a minute, Rob, you know, I have my checkbook, she has hers, she pays her parts of the bills, I pay mine. You know what? I have seen that create conflict in almost every time that I've run into that. Because what part of the two become one does that not describe, you see? So it usually creates division, and I have seen it. So I want to fix that. If you have two accounts, you need to join them together as one. I recommend that highly. So let me give you an example. When Mari and I first got, and let me tell you, you need to unite everything, okay, together. It's not only just for the sake of the legal process and all of that kind of stuff. It just makes, you're saying, we've become one. I'll give you an example. When Mari and I first got married, and it's especially important for the girls here that are here tonight, she moved over from Arizona. So she moved over from Phoenix. So she had a car that was in her name when she moved here. Well, it had to be re-registered. So we get married, we re-register the car so we put it in our name. I had this old Jaguar that I used to own. It was in my name. Didn't need to be registered. Never, for me, Rob, never gave it a second thought. So maybe a few months into the marriage, she says, hey, you know, my car's out of gas. And I said, well, take the Jag. Go for it. She goes, you mean your car? And I go, what do you mean, my car? It's our car. She goes, my name's not on the registration. And she didn't say it meanly. She was making a statement that, well, that's yours. My name's not on that. And it sent me a really, message loud and clear. Oh, wow. Yeah, my name's on hers, and we've joined together and made that one, but we haven't taken that step with this one. So it made her feel like it's mine, and that's yours is ours, but this one's mine. Does that make sense, gang? So what did I do? Went down, took care of that right away, got her name on it, and now in everything, I mean, even the motorcycles, her name's on it. She'll never ride it alone, okay? She can't reach the ground anyway, right? And she's the deer hunter on the back. She finds the deer, but they're ours. In fact, I made sure to tell her one of them, the cushy ones, hers. So that one, she wanted something cushy. So now whenever I need to buy some cool stuff, I say, honey, it's for your bike. See, you got me, men? Okay. And so very, very important lesson. So even on these kind of things, we are together. So that's what builds trust between two people. If they say, I'm going to trust you enough to put my name in the bank account, my name, our name is each on each of the, you know, in the deed of the home. I had a very good friend of mine years ago, and he was getting married, and he had, you know, William had done pretty good for himself for a young guy, and he had owned a couple of houses, and I think he had even a rental, so the house he lived in, and another house, and then a rental condo or something like that. And so Mari and I were out to dinner with these guys, and they had just gotten engaged. And in front of us, he drops the, you know, the bomb that he wants her to sign a prenup. And I go, you know. And he says it in front of us, you could have seen the look on this poor girl's face. And I'm going, William, this is not the time to bring that up. But you know what? I can tell you, that created an area of distrust in their relationship that didn't even last, I think, 2 years, and it was over. And so he was basically saying, I don't trust, I don't believe in our marriage enough that I want to share everything that I have. I'm not going to become one with you. Do you see what I'm saying, gang? And it created a lack of trust. Now, let me give you a couple of exceptions for those of you that are like freaking out right now, okay? If you own your own business, okay? If you own your own business, you obviously need a separate business account, okay? But if you're married, your spouse should be on the paperwork to that business. Both people should be on that, you know, on the ownership of the business. So secondly, if you both agree to have your own separate stash accounts, okay? So I've talked to some husbands, wives, where they say, we have a joint account of which all of our household expenses are taken together. But she has her own little account, and I have my own account. Because you know what? It makes it easier for you to buy a gift for your wife or your husband if you want to. You know, where right now, you know, Mari and I, we do not have that. So I have to be really creative, you know, because if I buy anything with the credit card, it comes up on hers. And she'll immediately send me, what are you buying? You know, and so if two people agree that they're going to have their own private accounts for their own mad money, if you will, then that's something that two people can agree on. I would say thirdly, and this is another exception, an inheritance. If one of you receives an inheritance, someone has said to you, I want my, you know, Rob to have this inheritance. Well, I think if you want to set up an inheritance account, then that is an exception. And, you know, Mari received an inheritance years ago. And I told her right up front, Mari, listen, your grandmother wanted you to have that. That's yours. You do what you want to with that. Now, of course, she made it ours, but I wanted her to know, no, that's something that your grandma gave that as a gift to you. I didn't feel right as her husband saying, that should be ours. Does that make sense, gang? But if a husband and wife say, no, I don't care. She gave it to me, but I'm married to you, and this is going to be ours. And Mari, you know, ultimately, with a lot of manipulation, did do that, okay? And so, you know, I think that that's one of the other ways that it can be an exception. And I have a fourth one I'll get to here in just a second. So once these things are settled out, find out who's better. If your wife is better and more disciplined, delegate it to her. And, you know, don't be a fool. Run your finances in the ground because of your stinking pride, guy. I literally had to take a credit card away from a husband one time and say, you can't keep it. You're irresponsible. Give it to me. I was ready to cut it up in front of his wife, but... So, you know, men, if it's better, you know, you let her do that. Now, this creates another difficulty, okay? In the line of, if you give someone the responsibility to do something, then you have to give them the authority to make decisions. Because responsibility without authority is like hands tied behind your back. If you've ever worked in a company where people say, hey, you know what, here, this is now your responsibility. But you have no authority to make any decisions whatsoever. Or if you do make a decision, every decision gets questioned or usurped. Are you with me so far? So husbands, listen carefully. Or wives, if your husband is taking care of the finances. Whoever is taking care of that, and especially for us as men, if you've handed that off to your wife, then you need to submit to her in that area. Because you remember, when we got into Ephesians 5, I skipped a verse. Because it talked about, yes, wives, be submissive to your own husband. But did you know that before we get to that, in verse 21, it says, submitting to one another in the fear of God. So husbands, if you're going to give your wife that responsibility, and you don't give her any authority, it says to her, I don't trust you. Wives, same way if it goes the other way. So then, whoever is doing it needs to have not only the responsibility, but authority to make certain decisions. And the other person needs to be submissive to the one who's taking care of it. So again, let me give you a couple of examples. If I've had on occasion where, so for Mari and I, for instance, I'll just give you an example. Mari takes care of it in our household. So I won't just arbitrarily go and spend money without her approval. Why? Because that can totally mess up a budget. If she's working on a budget and she knows how much is there, she is established, and by the way, we can talk about budget and we can get, you know, basically a budget is you're going to allocate funds. And so we have pre-allocated funds, so even though we may have a bunch of money in the bank, all of that's allocated so that when the property taxes come up, the money's there. We're not freaking out going, oh my gosh, where are we going to get the money? So you take a little bit each week and you set it aside. It's allocated funds. So if you have set up and established a budget that you live by and the other person disrespectfully goes and takes their ATM card and pulls money out, The person who's trying to, who has the responsibility and the authority, is going to look at that and say, oh my goodness, what did you just do? Now I don't have the money to pay the property taxes. So whoever is in charge, the person who's given that responsibility needs to be submitted in that area. So you need approval before you just go and spend money. You need approval before you use the ATM card. And so that then brings about an area where you can discuss things with your spouse, to where you can say, hey, you know, husbands, for instance, hey, I want to go buy this tool that I've been looking at. Mari will say to me, well, how much is it? Then that gets for me my responsibility, where I say, well, I don't know. She says, well, let me know how much it is. So I'll come back to her and say it's X. She then says, ooh, well, we don't have it. Can it wait for a couple of weeks? So then I say, yeah. She goes, if you can give me a couple of weeks, I'll have it for you. See, now there's communication. There's submission on my part, instead of saying, I use ATM card when I want, because it's, you know, I'm the authority here. I'm the ruler of the roost. That's so disrespectful to the person who's trying to carry and manage the books. Does that make sense, gang? So, husbands, if you've given that responsibility to your wife, you need to be submitted to her in that area, and you've given her that responsibility, she needs to have the authority. But vice versa. It needs to be the same thing for the wives, if your husband is doing that. You can't just go, you know, arbitrarily spend money also, unless you, you know, talk that out with your husband. So, as far as budgets are concerned, let me just hit that real quick. You need to sit down and determine, believe it or not, I've done this with people that have been married 30, 40 years, and they come in, and I'm going, okay, well, you know, what are your guys' expenses? Well, I don't know. We just wing it every month. And I go, how in the world have you guys survived? So you sit down and you look at, what are your necessary expenses? So that would be your fuel expenses, your house payment, your insurances, you know, your propane, and Ramona, your propane bills, your electricity bills, things, and the probably the biggest expense that we have is the Ramona Water District, right? And so you look at these things, and you list those out. What are your expenses? Necessary. That you have to have that. Then you take a look at your unnecessary expenses. How often do you go out to eat? You know, your... how often do you entertainment, you know, cable, cell phone, all these other things that you look at. Then you total those two up. So your necessary expenses, your unnecessary expenses. If those two total up more than your income, you're in trouble. Does that make sense? It won't be long, and you'll be like our country in deep debt, okay? So, you know, we should expect Congress to do the same thing that we have to do in our own homes, right? No, they just print more money. We don't have that luxury, okay? So you want to take a look at that. So, you know, those are kind of things. So what you then start doing is you start saying, okay, the unnecessary expenses need to go, or we need to trim them back to where this income and expenses meet. And hopefully that your income is a little higher so that you can start, you know, you'd be able to save a little bit of money. So that is something, and that's just scratching the surface here for you guys. So you budget this out. You know what it costs. You determine how the income works. You divide it by 52 if it's a weekly thing, or if it's every 6 months, you divide it by that, you know, and then you just set aside a little at a time. That way when the bills come, you're not freaking out. You're not going crazy. You know, I had a guy years ago come in, and he was like in a panic mode saying, Rob, you know, I don't have any, and you know, we're out of food. We don't have any money for food. And I happened to know this guy had three horses at his house. So I asked him. Now, see, this is where people don't like coming to Rob for some of these things, right? I said, so how much is a horse every month? You know, how much does it cost to feed it, vet bills, how much does it cost to maintain a horse? And at the time, this was, you know, probably 10 years ago, he says, I don't know, 100, 125 a month. I said, you got three, so let's do the math. So we start doing the math, and I said, do your horses have food? So why is it that your kids don't have food? You understand what I'm saying? Sometimes you need to take a look at an unnecessary, oh my goodness, get rid of a horse? Rob, you're so cruel. No, I'm just looking at some people and how the priorities get all crazy mixed up. The same guy had a package of Marlboros sticking out of his pocket. So I said, how much is a pack of smokes right now? And at the time, I think it was like $6 a pack. So I said, how many you smoke a day? Two. We did the math, and I said, there's your food bill right there, dude. It's time for you to quit smoking. So he left very angry at me. But you know what? Sometimes we need to take a look and a hard look at certain aspects and to see. Sometimes our priorities can be totally out of whack. So, you know, that just gives you a little bit of an idea of what that is. So think about it. Are you better at saving or are you better at spending? Are you better at, keeping track or are you fly by the seat? Take a look, take a good look as a husband and wife and say, you know what? Here is an area where I am weak. Now, if you're both strong in that area, let's say that both, I had one couple that came in, the husband thought because he was supposed to be the authority, he was supposed to take care of, but his wife was an accountant. This guy was totally messing it all up. I said, dude, what are you doing? Give her the checkbook. You know, what are you, crazy? So what if both of you are equally good? What if both of you are equally adept at taking care of the finances? Okay, next question. Who has more time? Take a look at who has more time. If the husband's working a 60-hour work week and the wife is only working 40, well, then maybe it would be better for her to do it because she has more time on her hands. So you take a look at that, and both of you come to a mutual agreement, and you share it like that. What if they're both bad? Hire an accountant. You're exactly right. I would say that when two people are bad at it, which I have had that happen, there are people that make a living doing that. You bring them your receipts in a little cardboard or in a shoebox, you know, every week, and they dole out the money, and you trust them and you submit to them. Because I've had that happen also, where yes, exactly right, Jason. You pay somebody to take care of your finances, and then you submit to them in that particular area. So, now, let me share something with you then, because this is probably a principle that it's the secret to financial, if you will, stability. When we're on this, if we're talking about a budget, one of the first things that people oftentimes neglect, and yet this is one of those areas that I think that for all of us as Christians, something that we need to be reminded of or we need to kind of take a look at. Again, this is not going to be a systematic study of this because there ain't no way we have time for that. But, you know, I think it's kind of funny because there are promises that are written in the Word that people love to highlight, but they fail to see conditions. So, for instance, Philippians 4:19, my God shall supply all your needs according to his riches and glory by Jesus Christ. That's an awesome verse, isn't it? But do you know who it's written to? Do you know the context of it? Paul is talking to people that are givers, people that are already giving. And he's saying to these people that are already giving, my God will supply all your needs to his riches and glory. So sometimes we need to take a look at context to see what's happening. You know, so I'm going to just give you an idea. One of the things that I think is very, very important, one of the most misunderstood things, especially in the modern church, is the concept and the principle of what is the tithe? What does that mean? It is a mystery, but it is an awesome secret. It's kind of one of those things that I have found that when we're off track, God uses our finances to get our attention, doesn't he? All of a sudden, something dries up or things start to break and we're watching our savings dwindle. And so this is an area that I think sometimes God has to get our attention. So here's a promise that God has given to us. And I think that maybe just to touch on it just briefly tonight, just to help us all to understand. The principle is called the tithe. Now, the Hebrew word tithe, it means tenth. That's what it means from the Hebrew. So what exactly is a tithe? So let me give you a few things. The first time the word tithe is mentioned is in the book of Genesis. Did you know that? Look at it. I'll show it to you. Genesis chapter 14. So I'm just going to hit this subject because I will tell you this. Probably, I would venture to say 60 to 70% of those that end up, you know, in our offices in financial difficulty, 60 to 70% have been neglecting the principle of the tithe. And so God's getting their attention. And I'll share a personal story with you tonight also. I happen to be one of those blessed kids that my dad taught this principle to me as a kid, even though I didn't like it, right? When I'm out mowing yards for, you know, $3 for mowing somebody's yard, you know, back in the 60s, and my dad, I'd come back in and say, "Dad, look at this. I mowed four yards today. I got 12 bucks. He'd say, "Okay, Rob, now let's talk about the principle of the tithe." And as I watched him peel that away, that $1.20 away from me, I'm going, okay, well, I'm not liking this principle, you know. But he taught me the principle anyway, whether I liked it or not. So are you in Genesis 14? So this is the encounter of Abraham with Melchizedek. You remember Melchizedek, Abraham goes up, rescues Lot. And so as he's coming back, he has an encounter with this mystery man, Melchizedek. And the prince of Salem. So look what it says, verse 18. Then Melchizedek, king of Salem, brought out bread and wine. Does that sound familiar? And so he's sharing communion with, you know, Melchizedek, the king of Salem. I believe that this is a pre-incarnate, probably an image of Jesus here. He was the priest of the Most High God. And he blessed him and he said, "Blessed be Abram of God Most High, possessor of heaven and earth. And blessed be the Most High who has delivered your enemies into your hand." And look what it says. And he gave him a tithe of all. So he gave him a tenth of all that he had collected. So this was before tithe was written in the law in the book of Exodus, before Moses came about. So obviously this was something that was a known principle that had been handed off, probably even in paganism, that God, if you will, brought into the kingdom. So, not that it's a pagan thing, but it's something that God was basically saying, no, this is something that I want you to do. And so, it then was handed down until it came to Moses, and then it's found in the book of Leviticus as well as in the book of Numbers. So, let me give you a paraphrased edition of how this comes about, just for the sake of time. So, when God established the priesthood, he told them, he sets the tribe of Levi aside. So the sons of Aaron and Moses, they were the tribe of Levi, so he sets these guys apart. And he says, in many ways, he says, you don't get to be land, you don't get land in the land. You're going to live all over the place. So I don't want you consumed with taking care of property, growing crops, and all that kind of stuff. Your job is going to be taking care of the spiritual needs of the people. So he says, I then am going to provide for you through the tithe of the people. So I'm going to bless the people. They're going to then bring the tithe, and that would be grain, wheats, corns, and even at, and you know, when you get later on, when they would sell product and then bring the coinage into the temple. So they would talk about sheep, if you're a shepherd, goats, whatever it is that you had. As they would increase, they were to bring a tithe, a tenth of that, to the Temple Mount. That provided for the priesthood. So the priests could minister to the spiritual needs of the people. The people met the physical needs of the priests. Does that make sense? That's the origin and the purpose behind it originally. But at the same time, what this was doing is it was creating a trust in the needs of the people or in the lives of the people. So the people were going to say, well, wait a minute, my sheep just had 100 sheep. You mean I got to take 10 of those sheep and bring it to the temple, or I got to sell those 10 and bring in the coinage? And God was like, yes. And are you going to trust me with that? Or with their grain? And so it had to deal with the selfishness of human nature. But at the same time, God was saying, I want to have the Levites take care of the spiritual needs of the people, but in order for that to happen, you got to take care of their physical needs. And at the same time, I'm going to deal with the selfish nature of mankind. And I want you to learn how to trust. So many things were happening as a result of this, right? So as long as the people were faithful to do this, everything worked. But there was a problem. Sometimes, and for some reason, we're not willing to trust God. We're willing to trust him with our eternity. I don't want to die. I'm going to heaven, man. Okay, well, are you willing to give a tithe of a tenth of all that you want? Well, now, Rob, you know, don't be talking about money to me, okay? And so it's interesting. So the tithe makes absolutely no sense on paper. You talk to accountants and they think you're crazy. So God says, if you will simply trust me, you will live better on 90% than you will on 100%. That doesn't make sense to the natural mind. That's why it's a God principle. It's a God thing. So I have had people say, Rob, explain that to me. I can't. I don't know how it works. I don't know how this all happens. I can't explain the God part. I only know that he has asked us to do this by faith, saying, God, I'm going to trust you to make up the difference. And he does it in crazy ways. I mean, he'll do it by making stuff last forever, right? He'll do that by suddenly gifts come to you out of nowhere. Or, you know, people that just are just for some unknown reason just decide that they're going to bless you somehow. So in fact, God tells us that, and this is why husbands and wives got to be together on this. This is where it's all tied into marriage, okay? God tells us if we keep back 100%, the Bible tells us that in essence that's stealing from God, is robbing him. Did you know that? Let me show you something. Turn to Malachi 3. This is where the principle is laid out, and I will get to you people that are saying, but Rob, you're quoting all these Old Testament things. What about the New Testament? We'll get to that too in just a second, okay? So in Malachi 3, let me show you something. Look at verse 8. Haggai, Zechariah, Malachi. So then that's the last Old Testament book. So look what he says in verse 8. Will a man rob God? I love it. My name's there. But you, unfortunately, my name means taking what doesn't belong to you. So it's kind of a bummer. But so yet you have robbed me, he says. But you say, in what way have we robbed you? How does he say we do it? Tithes and offerings. Interesting. When we hold it back. So this was a very dark time in the history of Israel. And here's why. The people had drifted off into selfishness. They started saying, hey, you know what? This was ridiculous. I earned 100% of this. So they started thinking, I'm going to keep 100%. So they slowly stopped bringing the tithe. And as that happened, the priesthood, some of these guys started saying, hey, we're running out of stuff. Sorry, can't provide for you. So some of the priests started saying, well, you know what? I need to go get a job. So they began to go and leave their priestly duties to go earn a living to provide for their families. So one by one, they would disappear, which then meant that there wasn't a priest to minister to the needs of the people. So the people started leaving. So the tithe continued to dry up. The priesthood, so you see where this goes. So it got to the point where the priesthood was at a minimal rate, and everything took a vicious spiral downward, and the spiritual nature of the people became very, very self-centered, very dark, to where they weren't doing this anymore. So God then said, okay, instead of blessing your flocks, instead of blessing your crops, instead of blessing you because you're trusting me, I'll show you what happens when you stop trusting me. I'll show you what happens when I don't get involved in the picture. And God took his hand off. And slowly the disease began to take place in the flocks. And slowly the rain stopped providing produce and stuff like that. So God basically was saying, you want to do this without me? You don't want to trust me? Okay, I'll let you do this on your own then. And down they went until finally God got their attention when they started crying out, God, God, we need your help. We need your help. And so God answers with a question. Will a man steal from God? He says, guys, you want to know what's going on? You know, he points out that they haven't been trusting him. You thought you're going to take, you know, and live on 100%. You're not going to release that 10. Okay, you want to be selfish? Let me show you what happens. And he tells them that you were stealing from him. I mean, what a radical thought, right? Then he challenges them. Look what he says. Therefore, you are cursed with a curse. Look at verse 10. Bring all the tithes into the storehouse, that there may be food in my house. And try me now in this, says the Lord. And that word try, your version maybe read test. In my translation, double dog dare you. I triple dare you, says the Lord of hosts. If I will not open for you the windows of heaven and pour out for you such a blessing that there will not be enough room to receive it. So God answers their question or their cry with a challenge. You guys are robbing me. You're withholding the tithe. This is what I set up. I need you to trust me in this. Then he says, okay, I'll tell you what. You want this fixed? Yes, Lord, we want it fixed. Okay, bring in the tithe. Notice, he tells the people, they're already financially strapped. Bring in the tithe. He doesn't say, all right, I'm going to pour down rain, and you're going to miraculously see an increase in your flocks and your herds. Watch this, then bring in the tithe. He doesn't say that. He says, I want you to now really going to trust me because out of your lack, not out of your abundance, but out of your lack, I want you to bring in the tithe. And the people do, and God once again begins to bless them. And so it's an amazing thing. So he gives them permission to test him. He dares them. Do you realize that in 66 books of the Bible, there's not one other place where God says, I dare you. Not one other place other than in the area. Are you going to trust me in this particular area? So I personally have seen God do this in many, many ways. As I said a moment ago, my dad taught this principle to me as a kid. And I'll give you a personal testimony. When Mari and I got married, and this is just for us, okay? This is just something that happened for Mari and I. This may not be for everyone, okay? But after our son was born, Mari told me, she goes, you know what, Rob, I wanna stay home. And I want to stay home and be a stay-at-home mom. My mom, I mean, I'm the classic Leave It to Beaver household. My mom was there when we got home, you know, that kind of a thing. Mari's mom was not. She goes, I came home to an empty house all the time. I want to be able to stay home. I came home to that kind of. But I told her, I said, whoa, honey, you know, if we want to buy a house, you know, we're going to both have to work, blah, blah, blah. And then the Lord woke me up in the night. And this was, you know, probably the second year of our marriage. Woke me up in the night. And he says, Rob, I'll tell you what. If you'll be faithful to me in the tithe, Mari will never have to work. And I'll give her the desire of her heart. So I told Mari this dream that I had had, this kind of this word from the Lord. And so I can tell you, she put in her notice, she did not work. And in a guy in construction, we lived on one income to this day. So, but there was a season where God put us to the test, if you will. So Mari, we went through a crazy time in construction. And Mari came to me, and she goes, okay, Rob, here is our medical bill that we have to pay, our Kaiser payment, and here's the tithe. If I give the tithe, we won't have the money for the Kaiser bill. And so I said, well, pay the Kaiser bill. And so that became, because once you stop, it becomes easier to stop the next time. So that created about a two-month window where I logically processed through our financial needs until we continue to spiral to where I finally, after a couple months of this, I asked Mari, I said, you may have to go to work. So once again, the Lord wakes me up in the middle of the night and he says, I thought we had a deal. I said, what are you talking about, Lord? And he said, I told you, if you'd be faithful to me, if you would trust me, Mari would not have to work. So I repented. The next day, I got up and I told Mari once again, hey, you know, the Lord woke me up. And you know what? I had to repent because the Lord told me as long as we'd be faithful, he would do this. So I said, you know, about what is it that, how far have we gotten off, you know? And so I said, Lord, you know, I want to get back on track. I'll make this up because I'm not asking you to make it up. I'm asking you to be faithful. So to this day, you guys, as long as we've been faithful, the Lord has been faithful. And my wife did not have to work. Now, that's for us. So I'm not saying you go try that, okay? I'm not saying you guys put that. That was something that God spoke to my heart, our heart. That was something. And so there were times, you guys, being in construction where I'm thinking, I don't know how this is going to work. I don't know how we're going to make it. That's where I believe when Paul talked about a hilarious giver, we did that. We were giving, going, I don't know, we're going to make this work, Lord. You're going to have to do something. And we're laughing, right? And so faithful, and as we were, God has blessed in that area. Am I a rich guy? Yes, because of you guys. You guys, and I'm rich in many other ways, but not in the area of financial wealth. But, man, I count myself to be a very rich guy. So I am just telling you that this is an area for me where God said, are you going to trust me or not, Rob? And I think that's the principle of the tithe. It deals with the core of our own selfishness. Now, I know that I have doubters. I always do. Well, now, Rob, the New Testament doesn't talk about the tithe, they say to me. The tithe is under the law, not under grace. Old covenant, not new covenant. Really? Well, can I challenge you to tell me, if you're thinking that thought with me tonight, anywhere in the New Testament where Jesus or any of the other disciples nullify it? It's not there. Okay? Not there. Secondly, in Mark chapter 12, write this one down, in chapter 41, notice Jesus watched how they gave, not how much they gave, but if any, at any time that he was going to nullify the tithe, that would have been the opportunity. He even challenged the priesthood when he says, oh, you're so proud of how you tithe. You tithe on the mint and the cumin. And, you know, he's talking about how they're so very careful about how they take, oh, you know what, I just receive an ounce or 2 ounces of this particular type of, spice. Oh, and so here's the Lord's portion. You know, and they did it in such a way that they, you know, drew attention to themselves. And so, Jesus, I noticed that you tithe on mint and cumin, and you're very careful. And then he says, and so you should. But you've also neglected the more weightier things. So if there was ever a time when Jesus could have said, don't you guys get it? Tithing is of the old covenant, not now. You don't need to do that anymore. He made note of them, and he commended them for it, but then he said, I'm more concerned about a much bigger thing that you're dealing with. And so Jesus did not nullify it, and I believe that this is what Paul was talking about in 2 Corinthians when he said, he who sows sparingly will also reap sparingly. So in the New Testament, Jesus set up a different idea completely, or at least a different mindset. In the Old Covenant, it is this. 100% of it is mine, and God's asking me to give him 10%. Does that make sense? Well, that's Old Covenant thinking. In the New Covenant, Jesus basically said, everything that you have is mine. So it's all mine. I'm going to let you keep 90. But I'm going to hold you responsible for how you do what you do with that. Does that make sense? Do you see the difference? Old Testament, it's all mine. I give God 10%. New Testament, Jesus said, everything you have, I've given it to you. It's all mine, and I'm asking you to live on 90% instead of that 10, or instead of 100, excuse me. And so I think it's at the heart of us is trusting God. And do you realize that God has never asked for a pay increase? Isn't that interesting? In all these years. And so here's the deal. I didn't do this to get money from you. That's between you and God. I have no idea. I don't want to know. That's something that I keep my nose out of. I only want to help you. I want you to enjoy the greatest blessing that we get as Christians, and that is in the area of our finances. If you will trust God with our money, if we will do that as a husband and wife, I promise you, you will enjoy the blessing that God has for you. Now, please don't misunderstand that I'm saying you give to get. That's word of faith. That's not what I'm saying. I'm saying you give because God's asked you to. He's asked us to. And as we do, we say, Lord, I'm going to trust you in this particular area because I'm going to trust you in all these other areas of my life. So I'm going to trust you with this area also. And you get to enjoy the blessings of your obedience. And so I can tell you, if you trust that way, I will promise you that God will always, always, always be faithful. Always. And how he will provide for you will be crazy. You know, when my kids were growing, my kids were little, out of nowhere, you guys, there were times when we didn't have the money for groceries. Years ago, being in construction, all of a sudden there'd be a knock on the door. We go, who's that? We go out to the front door and there would be like 5 bags of groceries on our front porch. We told no one where we were at financially. God put it upon the heart of some. My kids to this day call it Jesus groceries. Remember Jesus groceries when we were kids, you know? And sometimes, you know, the Lord provides in the most mysteriously crazy ways for people that'll just trust him. I think a good example, let me give you this one example for you, okay? R.J. Letourneau, he's the man that developed these great movers, the tractors. He's the guy that, in the John Deere kind of stuff. Do you guys know what those are? Okay. So he was the one who developed all of these great earth movers. Okay. When he started out, Christian guy, when he started out, he said, God, I'm going to give you 10% of this income. And he lived on his 90. But as God continued to bless him, he kept saying, I don't need this much. So he started giving 20. And then he lived on 80. And nobody told him, no one told him to do this. This was just something between him and the Lord. And I'm not telling you to do that. I'm just telling you, this is a guy saying, I'm trusting. He had a gift of giving. There are people that have that gift, by the way. It's an amazing gift. So by the time, at the end of his life, when he was dying, he was giving away 90% and living on 10. Isn't that crazy? And he just said, he made this statement that Chuck Smith used to always tell, you cannot outgive God. You can't. He loves you too much. And so gradually, as he continued to give more and more, he got to watch that. And he began to say, Lord, I can't live on this kind of money. You take it. And he began to just continue. Do you know the guy that owns Chick-fil-A does the same thing? Isn't that a trip? And that guy, if you've ever read his book, he does the same thing. And so an amazing story. So guys, again, this was me sharing with you. This is an area of, in the marriage, of dealing with and taking care of finances in the marriage. But there's a principle that if every married couple will stick to that number one principle, you'll get to watch God provide for you. And it's an area of trust. So next week, for those of you that are willing, for those of you that are brave enough, we'll talk about intimacy. And I'll talk and I'll share with you what to do when the honeymoon's over. You guys have heard that before, right? Oh, well, the honeymoon's over. How do you protect that? How do you get it back? For those of you that want to know, bring your spouse and come back and we'll rate that PG-13 and we'll have some fun next week, okay? So let's pray, shall we? Lord, thank you so much for how you provide for us, Lord, how you take care of us. You're so good to us, Lord. You're way better to us than we deserve, that's for sure. And I thank you for your great love for us. And I pray for each of us that are sitting in this room tonight. Lord, I pray that somewhere in the midst of this that you spoke to us, or for those that will be listening to us online, that you will speak to them. And Lord, I thank you how you have taught me over the years in this particular area, and how you've disciplined me and corrected me and then blessed me. And I pray that you would do the same thing to my brothers and sisters in this room tonight. And so, Lord, we commit the remainder of our week to you. In Jesus' name, amen.